So let's do it here. Were you all at the first two classes?
Yeah. Well, I was at the first and second class.
All right. So I'm going to do a little bit of review here. Not much, but it has been 2 weeks since we met, or 3 weeks. Terrible. But so let's see here. Theme of Daniel. No, Jesus is not really a character in Daniel.
That's the whole Bible.
Theme of Daniel.
God rules the nations.
God rules the nations. Do not fear. At least that's my take on it. Okay, the message, how to stay righteous in an unrighteous world that's trying to undermine your convictions and get you to maybe be less, you know, more religious, but less... disciple-like. And then the idea that God is in control. By the way, when we say God is in control, that doesn't mean that God determines everything that happens, right? So we're not, it was not this sort of mystical idea that, you know, God chooses your marriage partner and God changes the light from red to green and stuff like that. What it means is God's in control in the larger sense. So if he wanted to intervene, he could or he would. Okay, got it? So, and then the two parts of Daniel are the practical stories of Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel interacting with the world, and of them holding to honoring God, whatever the situation is. That's chapters 1, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then the visions of the future, which will start today and finish next Saturday, are chapters 2 and 7 through 12. That's the basic outline. So rather than go from chapter 1 to chapter 12, we're doing the stories, the practical stories first, and then the vision second. Okay? And the two at first might seem to not particularly interplay. What do the visions of the future have to do with how Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Daniel interacted with those who were trying to get them to compromise? But the idea that I proposed is, if you understand that God rules the nations, if you know that God can bring in, take in kings and take them out, and that he can prophesy the future in great detail on hundreds of years beforehand, then that probably means he can take care of your situation. That he, in the less obvious things, in the smaller things, he can come through for you. And you see that in the lives of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, continually, they understand that God is determining what's happening, that God is deciding, that he's behind the scenes, that he is the one determining the course of history and protecting them if they rely on him instead of on themselves. So that's how the two halves of the book interact, the way I see it. The historical context of the book of Daniel, which we've not proved at all in our study of the book so far, is the persecution under Antiochus Epiphanes. This is in the years 167 or 164 BC. It's between the Testaments. Most Christians are peripherally, if at all, aware of this situation. All right, this is one of the Greek rulers who began a horrendous, horrendous persecution of the Jews. In the first week, we even read a little bit from First Maccabees, actually from Second Maccabees. Okay, so that's the context of the book. So, like we said, Revelation in the New Testament, Daniel in the Old Testament, Revelation being written to Christians suffering intense persecutions under the Roman Empire, Daniel being written to Jews suffering intense persecution under the Greek ruler Antiochus Epiphanes. Interestingly, over 400 years after the events that were prophesied. Okay, this is stuff like this. We talk about the historical background. The important background is you have the Babylonian Empire under Nebuchadnezzar. Cyrus defeats of the Babylonian Empire in Daniel chapter 5. The year is 538 BC. Cyrus takes Babylon. Then the Persian Mede Empire becomes the dominant empire. By the way, some of the things prophesied in Daniel have to do with Cyrus, which, of course, Cyrus was alive at that time. So these are not like amazing prophecies. That probably even a political commentator could have predicted that. Okay? So the Persians take over from 538 for roughly 200 years. Is the Persian-Mede Empire. And then what happens is Alexander the Great comes in. He conquers the entire Persian Empire, forming the greatest world empire at that time. In the 330s BC, he dies in 324. His empire is replaced by four dynasties and later a fifth dynasty. I know this is boring, but this is all very... To me, this is awesome. This history is awesome. All right, but for some people it would be boring. But this is very important, both in the theme of Daniel and in the prophecies in Daniel. Okay, so that's why it's important. So then Antiochus Epiphanes takes over. He is from the Seleucid dynasty, as we'll see. And in 167 BC, he starts a horrendous persecution where he basically tells the Jews, you need to accept Greek culture, Greek, maybe not necessarily Greek religion per se, although the Greek customs involve Greek religion. And so now there's an amphitheater there, and you're having Greek games going on in Jerusalem. Most of the Jews said, that's okay, we can handle that. But of course, the heroes in Daniel do not. So that's that. And then after that, the Maccabees are set up. And for about 100 years, the Jews actually ruled themselves. Sort of awesome. Until 63 BC, which is not mentioned here. Oh, maybe it is. Yeah, no. Well, it's not. 63 BC, the Romans come in. And then the last of the Greek empires or dynasties is ended with the Battle of Actium, which is prophesied in Daniel 11. Okay. And then this other stuff, you know. Okay, great. So let's see. These are the empires, the Neo-Babylonian Empire. When you hear about ancient Babylon, it's usually talking about the empire from 2000 BC. This is the Neo-Babylonian Empire under Nebuchadnezzar. Here is the Mede-Persian Empire at its greatest extent, included Egypt. Here is Alexander's empire, which was even greater in size, went all the way to the border of India. Okay, here's the outline. Okay, and now so far we've gone through Daniel chapter 1, 3, and 4, right? Great. So now we're going to be in Daniel 5. Let's open the Bible. Come on in. Feel free to pick up a muffin on the way in or sit down and do the muffin during the break. Perfect timing. We just did the review. We did the review, and now we're doing Daniel 5. The writing on the wall. And I was saying with Chris earlier, the writing literally was on the wall. Blaine and I were watching March Madness last night, and the commentator said he was literally carrying the team on his shoulders. I'm like, really? That's amazing. How did he do that? The whole team? And we were lamenting the fact that literally means actually, you know, instead of literally, which is what it's supposed to mean. But anyway, in this case, literally the writing's on the wall. Now, I have to give the setting. The king is Belshazzar. A little confusing because there's Belteshazzar, who's Daniel, and then there's Belshazzar, it's almost the same name. And Belshazzar was the last king of Babylon. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell the cool history thing before I start going through the book. Okay, now, there is the ziggurat in Ur. You've heard of the city of Ur. Who famously lived in Ur? Jan knows.
Can you say it?
That's not even a hard question. Abraham. Abraham. Okay. Anyway, Ur is in southern Iraq. Anyway, here's the deal. According to the book of Daniel, the last king of Babylon was Belshazzar. Okay? Right. All other ancient historians disagree with that. They said the last king of Babylon was Nabonidus. Now, Nabonidus was a... he had a coup, essentially. What he did was he killed Evil Merodach. Interesting name, Evil Merodach. That was his name. But it's evil. It's a Babylonian name, so it doesn't mean evil. Anyway, his name was Evil Merodach. And he basically assassinated him, and he took over. He was of the aristocracy, but he was not of the royal family. So in order to legitimize his rule, he married the daughter of Belshazzar. Now, but this is something that was not known. All historians agreed the last king of Babylon was Evil Merodach. But the Bible said it was Belshazzar. And of course, this is another reason why the critics of Daniel said, see, it's just a fantasy. You understand, like I said, the first class, I talked about this a fair amount. Daniel is the final fighting ground for those who know what they're talking about to try to undermine the belief that the Bible is inspired. Because we have these ridiculous prophecies, these insanely precise prophecies. And when we get to Daniel 11 and also Daniel 8, we'll see how amazingly precise that it, to deny that these are actual things that actually happened is, even the skeptic can't pull that off. So what they do is they try to say that Daniel was written after the events. Remember those years, 167 to 164 BC, after the events. And proof of that is there are these people in the book of Daniel that aren't even real people. For example, Darius the Mede. We'll get to that later. But the other one is this guy, Belshazzar. Not even a real person, they said. And all the contemporary historians agreed the last king was Evil Merodach. I'm sorry, it was Nabonidus. But then in the Ziggurat and Ur, somewhere, I don't know where, like right there, I don't know, somewhere in there, they found an inscription. And the inscription explained the deeds of the reign of Nabonidus. What happened was, because he was not a legitimate heir, he married the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Therefore, his son was a legitimate heir and therefore a legitimate king. And so what he did was he set up his son to be his regent. Do you know what a regent is?
It's kind of like the enforcer, isn't it?
No. So, for example, let's say the legitimate next king is 5 years old. They can't rule. So they'll have somebody as a regent who's the effective king. That's the idea. Usually the regent is older.
Right.
But in this case, the regent was younger. It was his son. And so Belshazzar ruled as king. In fact, Nabonidus was in Sin. Literally. There's a city called Sin, which is in the desert in Arabia. And Sin was the center of the worship of a god called Sin. I mean, I'm not kidding. And literally.
They were sinning.
All right. And so Nabonidus was really into mysticism and I don't know. It's hard to know exactly what's going on here, you know, why he was not hanging out in Babylon. So this guy, Belshazzar, he was effectively the king. All right? Now, it's interesting because in Daniel chapter 5, as we'll read with the writing on the wall, he says, "Who, if anybody can interpret the writing on the wall, I'll give them the third place in the kingdom." Why the third place, you know?
He's already the second.
Right, exactly. So here we have this detail in the book, which is unexplainable. But then when you find out that Daniel is accurate historically, all right, it also explains the thing in Daniel. And if Daniel was what they said it was, which is a fantasy, a pure, utter fantasy, written in the second century B.C., then, number one, how did they get Belshazzar right when all the Greek historians didn't even mention him? And number two, knowing that he ruled as regent and therefore Daniel could only receive the third place in the kingdom. So the point is, every time these critics try to prove that Daniel is fake, the exact opposite is what results. And therefore, I just believe the Bible. I don't know about you, but I believe the Bible. Any questions about how that works? Yeah.
So like the regent is only till the king.
The normal definition of a regent king is basically the effective king in place of the official king.
Until they become a baby?
Normally, but not in this case.
Until the other king dies, right?
Right. And so, anyway, I don't think they... In the inscription, he's not called a regent. That's the English word. It's an English word.
Yeah, I hear it a lot. Yeah,
right.
And stuff. I just never...
So, for example, let's say Louis the 16th. So Louis the 15th dies. Louis the 16th is 9 years old. Nobody in France is going to allow a 9-year-old to be their king. So they'll take maybe his prime minister. And that he will. And there's several cases in the Old Testament where there was a regent. In fact, in some cases, it was a female, actually. A couple of cases in the Old Testament. All right? So that's just the meaning of the English word. Doesn't really matter for us, other than you're curious about that. So Belshazzar was ruling as effective king. He was the effective ruler, even though he wasn't anointed as king, which, first of all, explains why Daniel is right, not wrong, and also explains why Daniel was offered the third place in the kingdom, not the second. Both of which wouldn't even, given what people say about Daniel, which is it was a fantasy, just made up stuff, why would you make up such interesting, exact, precise, correct information that you wouldn't even have had? Because I'm telling you, if you were to read, Herodotus wrote in the 4th century BC. And the other Greek historians wrote in the 4th or 3rd century BC. That's the material he would have had. So, to me, it's just further evidence of what I knew all along, which is the Bible is inspired by God. And not only that, Daniel was written in the 5th or 6th century BC. All right, anyway, King Belshazzar, Daniel 5 verse 1, gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, by the way, it's his grandfather. Okay, it's his grandfather.
It says ancestor, predecessor.
Yeah, right. Had taken from the temple in Jerusalem so that the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. So they brought in the gold goblets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives, his concubines drank from them. As they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Now God will put up with a lot, but God has his limits. Holding a drunken orgy using the items that were stolen from the temple to praise the gods of wood, clay, iron, bronze, and whatever. I mean, God's like, all right, forget that. By the way, why were the items of the temple in Jerusalem in the treasury of Belshazzar? Right, but how did they end up there?
Because they desecrated it, didn't they?
I would assume that's just where they stored everything, right?
Right, because Nebuchadnezzar conquered Israel.
Yeah.
And who was behind that?
Was it Darius?
No, God was behind that. I mean, it was prophesied all the way back in Isaiah 39, verse 2. There's emissaries from the city of Babylon, which at that time was a large city but had no significant political power. They're in Jerusalem, and Hezekiah's there, hey, check out all our stuff, you know? And God says through through Isaiah, that's not a very good thing to do there. Isaiah, you probably shouldn't be bragging about your stuff. So I'm telling you, these things are going to be taken to Babylon along with some of the royal family. And that was prophesied in around 720, 710 BC. It happened a little over 100 years later. So the point is, remember who put Nebuchadnezzar in his place? Both positively and negatively. God did. See, God is the reason those items were there in his treasury is because God essentially placed them there to humble his people. Remember, God rules the nations. Mm-hmm. But this thing here, having a drunken party, using the items of God's temple, God's like, forget that. That is not happening. So this is a depiction, supposedly, of them, you know, getting drunk. And then we have the writing on the wall. So that's the setting. Belshazzar, who does not honor God. And by the way, Nebuchadnezzar did praise God. Nebuchadnezzar said everybody should worship Jehovah, all that kind of stuff. His grandson, Belshazzar, is pretty far from that. He's a party animal. When I wrote my book on Daniel, the name of the chapter is Party Animal Meets Man of God. Suddenly, the fingers of a human hand. Just imagine the picture. You're in this, everybody's getting drunk, and suddenly on the wall they see this hand. And the hand is like doing this. And it's like a movie or something like that. Okay? That's what happened. All right. His hand appeared and wrote on the plaster wall near the lampstand. By the way, the room where this probably happened has been located, and even the plaster wall. All right, in the ruins of Babylon, probably, it's not for sure, because you have to understand, Babylon was conquered. The very night that this event happened was the night that Cyrus conquered Babylon. Okay? And so, probably, the actual room has been excavated where this happened. Anyway, it wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale. He was so frightened. His legs became weak. His knees were knocking. And I think he probably peed his pants also because he was really, really scared. The king summoned the enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. And he said to these wise men of Babylon, whoever reads the writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck. And he will be made third highest ruler in the kingdom. All right, now, who living in Babylon would probably be able to interpret signs and dreams and things like that?
Well, we know, obviously,
Daniel, right? But this guy, Belshazzar, knew nothing of Daniel. Daniel's still around. The year is 538 B.C., so let's do the math. How long has Daniel been held as a captive in Babylon? 605? It's been 67 years. 67 years. So Daniel's about maybe 80, 85, somewhere in there. And so he's still there. He still is an official in the government. Apparently, he's there at the palace, but he's kind of been sort of pushed off to the side. And either Belshazzar doesn't know him at all, or he discounts him. And he doesn't consider him for solving this problem. Okay? The king summoned the enchanters, astrologers, diviners. This sounds familiar, doesn't it? All right? Actually, no, wait. We didn't do Daniel 2 yet, did we? Oh, okay. Well, if you read Daniel, you know. Blaine says this is very familiar because he's read Daniel chapter 2. The scene is fairly familiar. This guy is calling for all his fake, magicians and astrologers to interpret the sign. All right? So he summoned them. He said to these wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck. He will be made the third highest and the ruler of the kingdom. Then all the king's wise men came in. They could not read the writing on the wall or tell the king what it meant. So King Belshazzar became even more terrified and his face grew pale. His nobles were baffled. The queen, by the way, this is the queen mother. This is not his wife. This is his mother. She is the daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. She's probably a fairly old woman, maybe in her 60s or so, or 50s. I don't call that old, but she's not a young princess. You know what I'm saying? He calls her in. hearing the voices of the king and his nobles. By the way, she was not at this drunken party. Good for her. Came into the banquet hall. May the king live forever, she said. Don't be alarmed. Don't look so pale. There's a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. In the time of your father, he is found to have insight and intelligence, wisdom like that of the gods. Your father, King Nebuchadnezzar, appointed him chief of the magicians, enchanters, blah, blah, blah. He did this because Daniel, whom the king called Belteshazzar, notice it's not the same as Belshazzar, Belteshazzar, was found to have a keen mind, knowledge, understanding, and the ability to interpret dreams, riddles, etc. Call him and he will tell you what the writing means. So Daniel was brought before the king. And the king said to him, are you Daniel, one of the exiles, my father, king, brought from Judah? I've heard the spirit of gods is in you and that you have insight, intelligence, and outstanding wisdom. Now, this guy's drunk, right? But what happens in a situation like this? Like, for example, you're drunk and then you're in a car accident and the cops are putting light. It's like, oh, hey! You know, yeah, he's kind of like pretty sober right now. Yeah, the adrenaline pumps. Yeah, he's actually making sense here. All right. Now I've heard, verse 16, that you are able to give interpretations and solve difficult problems. You can read this writing. Tell me what it means. You'll be clothed in purple, etc. Okay? Then Daniel answered the king. Now let's try to imagine what his answer is going to be. Knowing Daniel's character, what's his answer going to be? What do you mean, tell him the truth? Okay, he's going to kind of lay him out a little bit. Dude, what do you think you're doing? Getting drunk, using the items from God's temple. All right, God's prophet does not mince words. God's prophet will occasionally soften the message a little bit. Daniel wasn't completely against that. All right, but the bottom line is he's going to tell the truth. Okay. So there are the words that he's going to interpret. Many, many, tekel, parson. Anyway, your majesty, the most high God, gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor. How do you think Belshazzar is going to feel about this?
Well, he doesn't really care about the most high God.
Well, that's true, but like, no, Bel gave me my kingdom. What are you talking about? Or Marduk. It's like, seriously, you're telling me that Jehovah gave the power to my grandfather? Mm. All right. So this is pretty bold. Pretty bold. Because of the high position he gave him, in other words, because God put your grandfather in place as the head of this amazing empire, all the nations and peoples of every language dreaded and feared him. Those the king wanted to put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. Those he wanted to promote, he promoted, etc. Verse 20, but when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, who's he preaching at right now?
No.
Belshazzar.
He's preaching
at Belshazzar. Right? But when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. That's what happens to people like you, Belshazzar. He was driven away from the people and given the mind of an animal. Remember, that's Daniel chapter 4. He lived with the wild donkeys. He ate grass like the ox. I assume that Belshazzar knows this. He has to know this. I mean, but yeah, but I would think it's possible. It's possible. I doubt it very much.
I would think that if he actually feared God, he would have humbled himself and been willing to share it.
Yes. Anyway, he's driven away from the people and given the mind of an animal. He lived with the wild donkeys, ate grass like an ox. His body was drenched with dew of heaven until he acknowledged the Most High God is sovereign. 22. But you, Belshazzar, his son, actually his grandson, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. So he did know all this. Unless Daniel's mistaken, instead, you've set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. Now that is a big mistake. All right, and we could even ask ourselves, how might we possibly set ourselves up against the Lord of heaven? That's one battle you're not going to win.
No.
You had the goblets from his temple brought to you. You and your nobles, your wives, your concubines drank wine from them. You praise the God of silver, gold, bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which cannot hear or understand. But you did not honor the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. Now, normally, by now, he would be dragged off to be executed. Mm-hmm. To have the nerve to tell the king that my God is the one who put you in power, and you are an arrogant person who deserves to be kicked out of your kingdom. He's threatening him. All right? Therefore, he sent the hand that wrote the inscription. This is the inscription. Mene, mene, tekel, parson. Which means counted, finished, weighed, divided. That's what it means. All right? So basically, the mene is a two-meaning... these are Persian words, by the way. This means essentially... counted. It also means finished. So in other words, the number of years of your rule have been counted, and they're coming to an end right now. You've been weighed in the scales, found wanting, and you will be divided, cut apart by the Persians. So the bottom line is, what he's saying is, according to this inscription, it is curtains for you, it is over for you, God has decided your rule is done. Yep.
Yeah, right.
You just told him the worst possible news.
Yep, that's what happened.
That was where the drunkenness kicked back in.
Right. But he did say, I would give this to you if you interpret it. So he was just keeping to his word.
Oh, I skipped verse 17. I skipped the best verse in the whole chapter.
Daniel says,
I can't believe I skipped the most important verse in the chapter, verse 17. Then Daniel answered to the king, you may keep your gifts for yourself and give your words to someone else. Nevertheless, I'll read the writing for the king and tell him what it means. You can keep your stuff. That needs to be our attitude towards the world, right? You can keep your stuff. Your positions, your jobs, your money, your vacations, your plaudits, your whatever. Not that those things are bad necessarily. But basically, Belshazzar is saying, do this for the robe and the all that sort of stuff. I have no interest in that. That you're assuming that I'm motivated by the things of the world, all right? And so again, remember the two themes: God is in control. That's coming out here. But also, do not compromise with the world. Do not ever go for the things of the world rather than honoring God. And Daniel is clearly giving full honor to God. I love it. You just keep your stuff, right? You can keep your job, take your job and put it somewhere. Whatever. Okay, great. Counted, weighed, divided. Or counted, finished, weighed, divided. All right, and so this message is really for the Jews. This is for the Jews suffering persecution under Antiochus Epiphanes. And I'm telling you, at some point, Antiochus Epiphanes was mene, mene, tekel, parson. It happened to him as well, because when people oppose God's work, God will oppose them. And that applies to everybody, including ourselves. So, mene, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. So, mene, mene. So, it means both numbered and end. All right? That's why it's repeated. Got it? And then, tekel, you have been weighed in the scales and found wanting. Perez, or parson, your king is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. And in fact, that word has a double meaning. Both mene and parson has a double meaning. Okay, this means counted and finished. This means divided, and it also means Persians. Divided by the Persians. Parson. He could have said many, many, tekel, parson, but he didn't. Okay, then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple. A gold chain was placed around his neck. He was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took the kingdom at the age of 62. All right, now you can read the account. I might have it in my notes here. I don't. Herodotus gives a beautiful account of... Let me see. I might have it somewhere else. I don't. Herodotus gives a beautiful account. What happened was, at this time, Cyrus had come up. He had conquered large parts of Babylon, but of course, Babylon itself was a completely impregnable city. You could put that city under siege for years with its massive walls. It has all kinds of water. That's for sure. It didn't have because there's a river that ran through it. All right, somebody should name a movie after that. River ran through it. But anyway, are you young enough? You never heard of that movie?
Yeah, I love that movie.
All right, yeah. That's an old one. No, it's not Keanu Reeves. It's the blonde, what's his name?
Oh, that guy, yeah. We saw a movie.
Yeah, Robert Redford. But anyway, never mind. What was I saying? I set myself on a...
Incredible city.
Oh, yeah. So what he did was he got his troops to go north of the city of the Euphrates, and then they dammed the river. And the river ran right through the city. So what they did was they basically waded through the river into the city. And it's probable that literally, while this story was happening, the troops were already in the city. Mm-hmm. It's a huge city. And so while this drunken party is going on one end of the city, the soldiers are entering. In fact, Herodotus' account mentions this party. It actually mentions, it said there was this, it doesn't describe it in exactly the same words, but it says the very night in which Cyrus's armies entered the city without a shot, without an arrow being fired, it says there was this huge banquet or party happening right there. So, and then of course, those who don't believe this is a whole fantasy, or this is just a made-up story. Well, that's interesting. Because not only does the idea of him being given the third highest place in the kingdom agree with the facts, not only does the fact that Belshazzar was in fact king agree with the facts, not only that, but also the idea that Herodotus said as the armies were entering the city that very night, there was this huge party going on in the palace. All this agrees with what we know from history. All right, so what's the lesson from this chapter?
Don't have a party.
Yeah.
Don't dirty God's instruments or
right. Whatever. Idolatry is not to be tolerated.
Yeah.
And don't mess with God. But also, that's the God rules the nations part, right? But then there's the other theme. Remember the other message, if you will, to Daniel, which is we need to stay righteous. We need to not be intimidated by the world. And we need to not do things in order to have the things of the world. All right, and then that very night, Darius the Mede took over. Now, this is the unresolved problem. So, up until about 30 years ago, those who would say Daniel is just a made-up story would say there's two proofs of that. Number one, because it mentions Darius the Mede, we don't know who he is. And because it mentions Belshazzar, we don't know who he is. Now, Belshazzar was a bigger problem for us. Because not only was Belshazzar not mentioned by anybody, but specifically, historians said he literally didn't even exist. Literally didn't even exist because the last king was Nabonidus. Well, that problem solved. We still do not know who this guy is.
Darius.
Right. Now, it was the Persia-Mede Empire. And so it was kind of weird. It's like the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Have you ever heard of the Austro-Hungarian Empire? The three main powers in the Axis in World War I were Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Turkey. And the reason they called it Austria-Hungary is because it was Austria-Hungary, kind of like it's Persia-Media. All right, so at some point, the Austrian Empire said, you guys are so important, and we don't want you to rebel against us, so we're going to kind of have a dual empire. It was the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And it was the Persian Mede Empire. And we're going to see prophesied in Daniel 8 how initially the Mede Empire was of more importance. In the Persian Empire, was less importance. But after the rule of Cyrus, it was the other way around. Instead of being the Mede Persian Empire, it was the Persian Mede Empire. But it's a little bit like the situation in Lebanon today, where if whoever's the president, then the other party is the prime minister. It's kind of like that. So they have the Maronite Christians. If they're the president, then the Shiite Muslims are the prime minister. But if the Shiite Muslims are the president, then the Christian Maronite is the prime. It's kind of like that. So probably this guy Darius the Mede was the Mede ruler, essentially. And history says Cyrus was the emperor of Persia. Now, what does this passage say that Darius the Mede is the king of? Of what?
It just says he took over the kingdom.
All right. Well, it turns out, sorry, it doesn't say it right there. It's of Babylon. Because later on in chapter 9, I think, I can't remember, one of those, it's going to say that he was the king of Babylon. In other words, Persia was this huge empire. By far the most important province in Persia was Babylon. So they said, all right, you get to rule Babylon. So he was the king of the Babylonian province. All right. Now there are some guesses as to who he might possibly be. Some people would say he was this guy, Astyages. Right? Astyages was the former king of Media. Other people say he's Ugbaru. So there was a general, kind of the chief general in the Persian Mede Empire was this guy Ugbaru. Maybe that is Darius the Mede. There's another guy, Astyages, who had been the king of Media before Cyrus took over and kind of became the head king. Or it could be that it's somebody else. I don't know. By the way, just, you know, one of the emperors of Persia was named Darius. The emperors of Persia go Cyrus, and then Cambyses, and then Darius. So the critics say, this guy, whoever wrote this thing, is just confused. But Darius, who was the emperor of Persia, was Persian. So this guy is not that guy, because he says it's Darius the Mede. Now, I'm sure there were thousands of Dariuses. I'm sure there were thousands of Cyruses and Belshazzars. So this is probably a common name. So the bottom line is history has not yet confirmed who this guy is. There is no document from ancient history saying there was a guy named Darius the Mede who ruled the province of Babylon. Okay? But given the fact that every single time historical information comes up, it confirms the Bible, I believe that if historical information did emerge, it would confirm this guy, Darius the Mede. All right? So like I said, the two sort of historical things in Daniel that people said, see, obviously it's just a story, of the two, one has been completely explained, in fact, proving those guys completely wrong. The other one, this one, Darius the Mede, we do not know who he is. Probably that's not a stumbling block for you, but I thought I'd say that. Okay, great. So let's talk about Daniel chapter 6. Daniel in the lion's den. This is one of the most famous stories in the entire Bible. Oh, in my book in Daniel, it says, read my Daniel book, page 88, from Herodotus. And the quote from Herodotus is, for it happened to be a festival. In other words, the night he entered the city, there was this festival going on. Okay, got it? How am I doing, Jen? Already? How am I going to...
We still have 6 minutes.
Well, he said 5,
oh, yeah, it's early. Close, though. 10 more minutes. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom. Now, what kingdom are these 120 satraps ruling?
Over
the Babylonian province, which was a huge province, the most important and most lucrative province in the entire empire. Okay, got it? With three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and satraps. Now, here's the deal. So you got this massive empire with huge revenue, and these guys are in charge with bringing in the revenue. Now, back in ancient times, what do you think? How do you think this typically went? These people who are in charge of bringing in the revenue, what do you think they typically would do? That
hold on to it?
Yeah, they keep a certain percentage, right? These guys are going to be filthy rich, right? And why would a king allow that? Because if they bring in 90%, you know, 10% of $100 million is $10 million. That's make you really, really rich. And that's kind of the way it worked. I mean, throughout history, that's how it worked. The tax collectors would take a cut. And right, that's how it's always worked everywhere. If you go to most countries in the world today are extremely corrupt. I was in Africa in January and just talking to these people, how horrible, because you can't do anything. If you want to run an honest business in Congo or in Nigeria, it is impossible. You can't do it. I mean, how can you do anything without paying bribes? It's really hard for a Christian to operate under these circumstances. But here comes Daniel, who's, you know, a faithful follower of God. And he's going to be put in this position that normally only corrupt people would ever occupy this position. Okay? Now, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. How are the other two going to feel about that? Their $10 million a year sort of thing is going to go away suddenly. They hate Daniel. And the point is this. If we're going to behave as godly people on the job, somebody may not like you.
Yeah.
For two reasons. Number one, you make it hard for them to do what they do. Number two, you make them look bad. I remember my friend, this was when we were in Wisconsin, he worked at a factory, and he was threatened because he worked too hard. He'd say, I'm there for 8 hours. I'm going to work for 8 hours. And he had people threatening him, said, that doesn't work that way around here. Stop working so much. Right? Because, you know, the average worker put in a five-hour day, an eight-hour day, and just sat around and talked, whatever. And what that meant is they could have more people, you know, more workers, right? If they're very, very inefficient, they need to hire more people. That's how unions work. I'll get in trouble. People love unions. There's good and bad things about unions, but that is one bad thing about unions, even though they're good and they're both. But unions protect laziness sometimes, right? But anyway, the point is, my friend refused to do that, and he was harassed. People wouldn't talk to him. They refused to be his friend. And so you just have to understand that if we're going to be a Christian, you know, there's things we don't do. There's ways we don't act, period. End of story. And all of our coworkers need to be fully aware of that. Hopefully that's the way it is with you. All right? That doesn't mean that we're holier than thou. That doesn't mean that we're constantly harassing about that. We're simply doing what's right. So that's what happened here with Daniel. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. Look at this. This is so awesome. But they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Imagine that. They would say about you, neither corrupt nor negligent. Can you honestly say, I've never, ever done anything even remotely corrupt or negligent. I can't say that. You know? I've made a couple copies at work for my home stuff. I don't know if you've ever done something like that. I have. All right, now, I'm pretty sure if I asked my boss, he would have said, go ahead. But, you know, it's just busy. Yeah, you know, because I do so much stuff on my money for them, so, you know, it's not a big deal. I don't know if you've ever done something even like that. I'm not boasting about that. What I'm saying is This is the standard for a Christian worker right here. And if you want to know what the standard for a Christian worker is, it's right here. All right? In no way whatsoever, ever corrupt or negligent. All right? If we could hold ourselves to that, I think people might be really mad at us. But you know what? There's going to be that 10% at work who say, I want to be like that person. All right? The other 90%, they probably want to be as well, but they won't admit that they want to be that way. Because I believe the honest, sincere-hearted people are going to be drawn to you. You're going to be the city on the hill. You're going to be the light of the world, and they're going to come to that light. Jesus says evil hates the light and wants to, you know, wants you to put a bowl over it and cover it up, but don't do it. Finally, these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God. Wouldn't that be awesome if they said, the only way we're going to get this person is on his or her religion. So we're going to have to get them on the fact that, I don't know, we're going to have to ban prayer. And we're going to have to say, you can't share your faith. Or we're going to put in place a policy that requires you to lie. Or that requires you to sort of not reveal to the government what's actually going on. I'm guessing there are companies maybe in the energy industry. Not your company. Your company is amazing. But I'm sure there's people working in the energy industry that there's corruption of that sort going on all the time. What Christians do is they say, we cannot do that. If you do that, I'm going to quit. And they may say, okay, well, then you go and quit. If not, we'll fire you. Okay? So with that, we'll take our break. Perfect timing. 51 minutes.